Support for GLT comes from Bloomington Public Library, now offering a local podcast, Shelf Understanding. Past topics include the tiny house movement, virtual reality, an interview with author Eric Larson, and more. Shelf Understanding is available at bloomingtonlibrary.org, through iTunes, or wherever you get your podcasts. This is 89.1 GLT and WGLT.org.
Ponds on our property can add beauty and value. They can also add to our to-do list. I'm Laura Kennedy, and this is GLT's Grow, your source for practical gardening advice from our expert in the field. From the Illinois State University School of Biological Sciences and curator of the Fell Arboretum, it's Patrick Murphy. Hello, Murph.
Hi, Laura Kennedy.
Today on GLT's Grow, protecting your pond, be it real or man-made. Now, you've got a real pond on your property, Murph.
There's some natural water there. And it kind of ebbs and flows with the levels of rain.
Right? Uh-huh.
Yeah, and versus the man-made ponds that many, many people have in their gardens or on their property.
Yes.
And they're really a lot alike. We could spend all month, all fall, talking about ponds, man-made and naturally occurring ones. So to avoid having to put everybody through listening to me talk all ponds all day, 24 hours a day, I get my wacky DJ voice on, too, for the whole thing. So there's some basics that you should know about.
Mm-hmm.
So when it comes to our ponds, usually the action starts at the bank or at the edges, at least as far as protecting it and preserving it. And the plantings and the treatments, if you will, that cover our banks are kind of the last safety net for our ponds. And you think ponds are filled with groundwater that either runs across the surface or runs parallel to the earth's surface below the ground, like underground creeks and brooks. They do exist, and they fill ponds.
Oh, cool.
But if you have a built pond on your property,
like we do,
there's no underground aquifer that's keeping it filled. So
right.
Keeping them full is the best thing to do for maintenance.
Oh,
is keeping them full. So if you
so
have
that's
the
a
means,
very simple step.
Yeah, because the less opportunity you have to allow for litter to collect in there, and this is litter that's blown in. An actual garbage litter is what I'm talking about. It's hard to deal with. It's hard to remove once it gets in the water. And if you have an agitator or some kind of filtration system, you know that a Mylar balloon that's lost all of its helium or a CVS plastic bag or wherever, retail plastic bag, it'll clog up the plumbing.
Yes.
And man, nothing like going out into the pond in November. Because somebody noticed the little bubbler in the middle's not working. Oh, why? It's because it's clogged with litter. That's
not good.
So think about that when you're doing the treatments on your bank. You might have a filter strip in an area that protects things from blowing into your pond from the prevailing wind direction. That's north by northwest. So you could have some kind of barrier planting that's away from the bank, but it's between where the garbage comes from and where it could end up. And that's a great way to snag that litter.
Could you give us a few examples of what would be good to put there?
Well, yeah, we can. If it's a residential or home site, you want a lawn. You want some kind of mowable vegetation to be the first area transition off the banks. There's a little place for wading or hanging your feet off that might have sand or rock. But beyond that, we can use low colonizing types of perennials or shrubs. It could be perennial grasses. It could be burning bush. It could be yews. It could be whatever fits the conditions that you have right there, the same rules that we use in selecting plants around our homes.
Okay.
Right?
So the right plant, right place.
Right.
So
something that drops lots of debris, a tree that is a debris prone, would not be a good one to have planted near your pond.
Good point.
So a sycamore is not a good tree to have near a pond. And cottonwoods are common near water, but they drop lots of stuff, and they can even have an effect on the quality of the water that's in there. And while we're talking about the water, the thing that keeps the water looking nice and smelling nice is to have life of some kind in it.
You mean like koi?
Koi is a good example. Guppies for the real small ponds. For bigger ponds, depending on where you live, you could use cold, warm, or cool water fish.
Mm-hmm.
So here in the Midwest, we're warm water. So what warm water fish are things like bluegill, largemouth bass, channel catfish. cold water for people up north and a little bit west and high elevation. Trout is an example of cold water.
And if you get hungry, you just go out and drop a line. And no, I'm kidding.
That's a sustainability practice in your pond. You have to harvest and eat some of it.
You're listening to GLT's Grow, our weekly gardening show for those who like to get their hands dirty. This week, pond care.
So when your water's supporting the fish, the reptiles, and the little phytoplankton that the creepy crawlies eat and the crawdaddies eat, that's a good sign that you're doing something right. If you have this well-kept piece of property and you notice that you have lots of algae in your pond, there's probably something going on with the groundwater percolating into your pond, and it could be a result of ag chemicals that are coming off of a field if it's very close to where your pond is. But most times it's just from lawn fertilizer, because lawn fertilizer is over-applied a lot of times when it's done by someone other than a professional, like a homeowner with good intentions.
Yes.
Yeah.
So we could be doing ourselves a lot of problem by doing that.
But if you see that's what the problem is, that is kind of a good place for you to start doing your research. A great place for people to go and have professional advice on their ponds is the Illinois Department of Natural Resources, or whatever your state's natural resource organization is. They can tell you who the pros are, who to go ask, because there are actually plenty of people that would be happy to come over and earn an honest day's work preparing your pond for whatever season is there. And when it comes to the algae, sometimes algicides and various chemicals are used.
Mm-hmm.
Don't care for that as much. Grow Corporate has had a positive influence on my life in trying to avoid chemicals.
Good for you.
And the earth we share with all living things. So maybe we could consider some sterile grass carp, right?
Sterile grass carp?
Yeah, because grass carp eat all this algae and everything, but they're sterile, so they don't reproduce, and there's less chance of them.
Wait a minute. How do we get them if they're sterile? It's a conundrum.
Well, it's from an authorized fishery.
Oh, okay, gotcha.
And how they do it is none of my business.
That's right. I think the fish are keeping their legs crossed
there,
on
man.
That one.
Yeah. So the DNR can kind of give you the information that you can't just come across on yourself by yourself. But there's one thing that we all need to do with our ponds, and that is to know how deep, how wide, and how long they are. Because that volume of water is kind of all essential holding card information that you would need to know for many things. You need to know it if you did decide to use some kind of chemical treatment to kill an invasive species, get rid of some unwanted water vegetation.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, the floating leaf vegetation is much easier to control, can be controlled by hand from the edge of a little rowboat or a canoe,
mm-hmm.
and no chemicals are needed. But if you know all these things, they can also give you the information you need to make other planning decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a discussion that goes well beyond the confines of our show's time frame.
Yeah.
Yeah. But that is the one thing you need to know. Just like we need to know the square footages of our grass and mm-hmm. the square footage of our landscaping beds, because that's what we use to responsibly purchase herbicides, fertilizers, and things like that. Just like our ponds, the yards, the chemicals have to be used correctly and nearly perfectly for them to work and not be a detriment to the environment around them.
Really quick, if you've got a favorite plant to put into a pond, what would that be?
Calla lily.
Calla lily. Oh,
yeah.
Beautiful.
Now, they won't live there all the time, but mm-hmm. I know it'll be there during the heat of the summer. I love cattails, but a lot of people find them to be troublesome, but they're my two favorites.
Okay, cattails and calla lilies. If you've got the pond, you can give them a try. Okay, Murph, thank you so much for that. Now, next week on GLT's Grow, we're going to talk about enhancing your plants with garden statuary to fit any decor. Say, do you have a gardening question for Murph? We'd like to hear from you. Just submit that on our website, fill in the form, and send it along to us. And Murph will answer your question on the air. That's WGLT.org/grow.